I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I am your host, Matt Rossi. With me this week are my two fantastic co-hosts, Liz Harper, the EIC of the site, and Joe Perez, who does lore and lots of other things for us, like recording these things so that you guys get to hear them. It's been an interesting week. For top stories, I think we're going to go straight to the Mage Tower and Legion time walking. Liz, do you want to talk about that?
Which part of it? I mean, first up, the Legion time walking is going to last for an additional 2 weeks to January 4th, which gives us 4 weeks of Mage Tower. And also, they've made a lot of changes since it was released. Like, a lot of changes. They have been, like, They've both readjusted the scenarios and changed things. Like, they've nerfed the healer scenario by making it to where those the casters, the arcane guys that stacked up a debuff, they've made it to where they cast less often. They've reduced the health of the guy in the tank encounter. They've done all sorts of like little tweaks. But another thing they're doing that I find is really interesting is they're nerfing a lot of old gear. They are nerfing old trinkets. They are nerfing old enchants and gems and things like weight stones, because in Legion time walking, you're scaled down to item level 50. And that means that you can use old gear and old enchants. And it's really valid. In fact, using old gear and enchants and gems is the best way to gear for the Mage Tower. So that's become so much of a problem, the scaling of it and how well old gear scales. Actually, one of the best ways to gear yourself up for the Mage Tower is to go and run Siege of Orgrimmar. Because you scale back to that item level anyway, and Siege of Orgrimmar gear has a lot of gem slots. Modern gear does not have a lot of gem slots. And lower level gear you can put more enchants on them, enchants that you can't put on modern gear. And yeah, because of scaling, those are effective.
A friend of mine did the Fury Warrior one. Mm-hmm. He put Crusader onto the Hellscream's Decapitator artifact, not artifact, the heirloom that you got for killing Garrosh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He went and put Crusader on both of it, and it healed him enough to get him through that fight.
Yeah,
the heal from the proc was actually stronger than anything else he could have put up there.
My friend went and got Soul Capacitor in order to go do the Mage Tower on his bear so he can get the appearance, because Soul Capacitor was just that much of a push over the edge as far as trinkets go. It's not unexpected, but it is crazy how some of that kind of, I don't want to say snuck through, but I can't believe that that never came up in conversation. Like the sheer amount of gem slots, gems that are available in chance.
Yep. I don't, old school, I'm not that old surprised.
School trinket procs. I'm not, again, not surprised, but
I'm not surprised that it got through because I mean, you guys will both, let me have both of you say this. I didn't see a ton of testing for this. Did either of you?
I thought it was up on the PTR for a while. Was it not?
I thought it was up on the PTR.
Yeah, but I didn't see or hear a lot of people saying, yeah, I went in and this is like this. It didn't feel like it got a ton of testing.
And the other thing is they buffed it like right before the patch went live. So it was harder because I guess they didn't think it was hard enough. And now they've said, okay, it's too hard. We're looking at it. But they're also nerfing all of the things that can make it easier. Like back in Legion, you know, okay, when the Mage Tower first came out, it was really hard. It was tough. But over the course of the expansion, you could start outgearing it.
Yeah.
But this is scaled. You cannot outgear it unless you go back and collect your Mists of Pandaria gear and gem them with Burning Crusade gems, which are the strongest gems. And it's so weirdly unintuitive.
Yeah, and that in particular is something that you don't expect to hear. Like, yeah, the Burning Crusade gems are the best gems. Like, that's the second that's the first expansion this game ever got, and it's the best gems. Okay,
it's that whole scaling thing. It's scaling. Scaling makes everything weird.
I mean, they did some nerfing back in the day with the time walking, where you used to be able to go back and get your old sets and use their set bonuses, and they nerfed set bonuses on old gear to this day. Like, if you go look at your old set gear, the bonuses just don't work on it anymore. They just straight up got rid of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. They either don't work, or if you, they're there in the tooltip and you mouse over them and it says not available or whatever the case is. But yeah, because again, same thing. Their power level wasn't what they wanted.
Well, there was like I remember the Mists of Pandaria Prot Warrior set had a kind of damage shield ability that just, you'd never want to get rid of it. Like, you'd want to, if you could wear two pieces of that set, you'd wear it well into Warlords because it was just that good.
Yeah. Well, there's the same thing with the Resto. Like, there were several points in time where, like, Resto Shaman, like, if you had a set bonus, you would, I think it was after Wrath and into, like, Kata or after Kata and into Mists, where, like, you could mix two piece and two piece and you were just, like, ungodly. It was weird.
So is there anything, like, besides the nerfing of the encounters and the change to gear and items, is there anything else for the Mage Tower?
I think it's... sorry, go ahead, Liz.
I think that's pretty much it about the Mage Tower. Just, we're still seeing balance changes.
I think we're going to see balance changes for a while. I think that even after these 2 weeks, we're probably going to get more adjustments. And then when it comes back, we might even get more, because certain classes just feel wrong. Like, I ventured in there once on my Resto Shaman. I ain't doing that again for a while. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, that was like the other thing. Like, they're also extending everything else Legion Time Walking, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Everything is getting extended.
Although I did notice a bug, by the way, or maybe not a bug. We were talking about this earlier in Guild, and it's worth mentioning. So last week, when Time Walking for Legion went live, you could talk to the Vault Keeper, and they would give you a key for the Legion M pluses. You can't do that this week if you did it last week, or at least I couldn't. And I don't know if that's intentional or not. I haven't seen anything on it. I haven't seen any comments on it. But just something to note that, like, I could not get another key this week on any of my characters, even if they didn't have an M plus key for Legion. Not sure why. So, yeah, that's all I got.
Okay. I'm trying to think of anything else to mention about this. I just think it's interesting and a little, I don't want to say it's bad. It's not bad that they're doing it. I certainly don't think it's bad that they're moving the date back 2 weeks. I think it should, with how rocky the launch has been, 2 weeks feels like it might actually not be enough. I don't know what you guys think about that. So I'll shut up now and you can say if you have an opinion about that.
I don't. I think, go ahead, Liz.
Hey, I think it's good. I think you need the extra 2 weeks because it's so challenging. The balance has been really weird. The best gear is from Mists of Pandaria. It's very challenging to get ready for these. And if you were just like, oh, hey, I'm going to go into the Mage Tower. The Mage Tower's live today. And you hadn't been prepping for weeks by running Mists of Pandaria raids and farming Burning Crusade gems, then it was more challenging. So I think it needed the extra 2 weeks.
I agree.
I wanted to ask you, because you sent this email, what I can't get Wowhead to open for me today. I don't know what the deal is. But what was the change to the Guardian Druid encounter? Like, because that's the same encounter as for every tank, right? They don't have a special.
Yes, one, but no, it's the same encounter. The Nether Horror was given the ability to cast while moving. I don't know if this was specific to the Guardian version of it, but
I'm sure a lot of Guardian Druids are doing it because they want to get the form.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, what they did was they made these Nether Horrors stop to cast their spell. And they thought that was going to be easier by creating more time for Druids to react, but it turns out it made it harder. And I don't understand that. I don't play a Guardian Druid, but they made this change so they would stop to cast. And that made it, do either of y'all know how that made it particularly bad for Guardians?
Well, Guardian Druids, they were probably doing a lot of kiting.
Ah.
And if the thing stops, then you can't kite it. It stopped to cast at you and it won't start moving again until you outrange it. And I don't think you can outrange those things. I think they can hit you anywhere in the space given. But I don't play a Guardian Druid, so I'm not 100% on that.
I would be looking to Corey or our guild druids to tell me, because I honestly don't.
But yeah, they reduced I can't say his name. Cruel, High Lord Cruel. Every time I see the name High Lord Cruel, I'm like, what was like, you know, High Warlord mean? Not around this week. What about, you know, jerk has here now. Like, seriously, cruel. Like, what? But anyway, yeah, that's so. Yeah, okay. That's I'm still thrown off by that guy's name, and it's been in the game since before the Burning Crusade patch. And remember the first time he attacked a city, and I was like, really? High Lord Cruel, that's his name. So yeah, that's got nothing to do with anything. Let's actually go look at the other stories, because I feel like we've talked about this one a bit. We're going to talk about the Warlock tier set. And
boy.
Because this one, I think people think that if you object to it, that you're like, you're being mean to Blizzard or something. I'm not sure based on some of the stuff people have said to me about it. And I don't really get it. Do either one of you want to explain this, or do you want me to explain it and then you guys can react?
I'm good.
Liz?
Go for it. You wrote the article. You can.
All right. So originally, like, I remember being on Twitter the day that this all kind of came out. They had done their big patch 9.2 preview in November. And For the most part, people were super excited about it, and they were very, very excited about the tier sets returning for patch 9.2, that tier sets are going to drop in the Sepulchre, the first ones. But people started noticing something, and I remember the tweet exchange when Taliesin and Ivetal tweeted, you know, this set's real unfortunate. And, you know, I was looking at it going, that's a big white pointy hood. And the people at Blizzard, of course, responded to his tweet with, "Oh yeah, we are going to change that." And so we recently got to see what they changed it to. And what they changed it to was from a big white pointy hood that from the back looks exactly like a clan hood, I'm just going to say it, to a big white pointy hood that from the back looks exactly like a clan hood with a racing stripe on it. And I've said at the post, I understand that sometimes the changes have to be progressive. I understand that there's a lot of work that goes into modeling, and it's often very hard to make a substantial change to it because, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into all that, and maybe they can't address it the way they might want to. I get all that. Nevertheless, what has been accomplished here is that they've taken a hood that looks very unfortunately like a clan hood and made it look like a very unfortunate clan hood that goes faster. Because, you know, it's called the Go Faster Stripe. That's what it looks like. And I don't feel that it is a sufficient alteration of the hood to make it not look like a clan hood. And I feel like some people don't really get what that is. Like, the clan are, they're terrorists and horrible racists. There's just, these are the people who, like, if they thought people, if they, to this day, they're still doing this. This isn't like the past. This is still happening. They will go to people's houses and, like, burn crosses and threaten them. And in some cases, they've killed people. I mean, I don't feel like people not wanting to see a clan hood on a character set. This is a tier set. This is what your character will be wearing. I feel like it's not that unreasonable to not want it. And I'm positive Blizzard didn't intend it.
I'm confident they didn't either.
No one would want to do that. You know, they were making this really cool, iconic, medieval looking white set, and it just so happens that
so
the two looks, you know.
Have you ever looked through any of the cloth transmog stuff before?
Not really. So I'm sure there's quite a few that might look that way.
The difference here is mainly the color palette. And I think that is why people are making the immediate association. And I'm not sitting here trying to say that it doesn't look like it or anything like that. But there are several cloth hoods that I can remember that look like that, but just have little things sticking out of them or a different color palette, like the Hood of Hidden Flesh, which is a weird horror version, but definitely is a pointed cloth hood. And definitely has that weird masking thing going on. There's been several of them throughout the history. One of the more recent ones, I think, was in Black Rock Foundry. The Slag Bomber's hood or something like that.
Yeah, so, but the Hood of Hidden Flesh has tentacles coming out of it.
I understand that, but I'm saying, like, so pointed hoods aren't a new thing, but they could have done maybe more to differentiate it, and maybe they probably should, because it is just a stark white hood. Now, I mean, if it was any other color, it would still probably be bad. It just needs something. It needs something that differentiates itself. And I'm just saying, like, the reason I'm pointing out those other ones is they have done pointed hoods in the past that nobody made that immediate association with. So they could very clearly do it again, and they probably should.
I think a lot of the hoods in the past kind of had some kind of drapey hood shape. Even when they had a point, and this is a very conical hood.
Yeah, I was saying to somebody that they could easily have Assassin's Creed-ed it a little bit. Mm-hmm. It comes to a very sharp point that from behind, it's immediately visually distinctive that mm-hmm. it looks like this thing. And I'm not, again, I think Liz and I have both said this in the past, that it certainly isn't a bad set. Otherwise, it just, you know, it's kind of hard to ignore once you see it. And I can understand why people don't want to see it.
And they could have done something like make it a little bit more like the Crown of Benevolence, where, yeah, that's a white hood, but it doesn't have the point, and it looks more like it lays naturally on the head. Or they could do something where it's like the Call of Destiny, where it's still a white hood, but it doesn't have the point, and it has different accoutrements to it. There are definitely options that they could have leaned back on or even used models for to sort of maybe update or move forward, and I think they should, is really what it boils down to.
Yeah, I feel like, to me, the big part of this thing is that a lot of people don't really understand. Like, one of the comments I saw that was actually aimed at me directly was that I was looking for something to be offended by. And it's like, I'm not really offended, because I don't think they did it on purpose. I'd be offended if they introduced if they called it like the clan armor and were like, you know, in support of the Southern Dragon or what have you. But they didn't. Let me get through it. All right. You don't need to be offended by something to just think it's a bad idea. And that's all I'm saying here. I think this is a bad idea. That's all. And it's not even an idea at this point. Blizzard knows they need to change it, and they're working on changing it. It's just that I think it's fair to say that the first step to changing it didn't really land. I don't think the gray stripe on the back of the hood really does anything to break up the silhouette, which causes the association. That's pretty much just it for me. That's what I'm focused on, right?
I agree. And I just think the other part of the problem is I think there's an entire generation of people that don't know who the clan is. And so mm-hmm. like, I'm seeing a lot of people react to this, like, it's not that bad. It's not that bad, who have no idea. And it's because, and this is something that I just want to, like, I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I'm just throwing it out there as a point of perspective, is there are some younger folks that have grown up that have never heard of them, that don't know what they are because they're not portrayed in pop culture or TV shows in the negative way that they used to be through the 70s and 80s and the 90s. There's no movies that really showcase how bad they are anymore, like there was when we had Blazing Saddles or other things like that, which questionable in its own right. But there are some people that legitimately just have no bloody idea who they are. And so they see a pointed hood and they don't make that immediate association. And I'm not saying that that's why they're saying it, but I mean, folks, like, if you're one of those people and you don't know, look into it, find out why people are upset about it, and maybe, you know, understand. Don't just immediately assume that people are like, oh, they're just mad at Blizzard. It's not just being mad at Blizzard. It's, this is a bad thing. This looks way too close to something that is very bad. And I'm giving you some benefit of the doubt. Some of you may not understand what it is, but do some research, look into it a little bit, and educate yourself on why it's bad. That's all I wanted to say.
Liz, I'm trying to let you talk because I saw you talking.
The only thing I would point out is that just because we've seen this on the PTR with its racing stripe, which is indeed not quite enough to change its appearance, you know, this could still be a first draft of what they're trying to do. Maybe they wanted to see, okay, if we add a stripe, does it look any better? And they added it and they looked at it and were like, oh, we need to make a second try on that. On one hand, it's like, okay, this is not working, and this is kind of not working in a way that is darkly hilarious because they've just added a racing stripe to this hood. But in another way, you know, maybe they're still working on it. I hope they're still working on it and, you know, seeing what they can do to make this look still really cool, but less like a racist symbol.
Yeah, I definitely think that they're working on it. I don't feel like they thought, put a racing stripe on it, we're done, let's go have lunch. I do think it's kind of funny that that's what they did, even though it's not funny in a hilarious, let's all laugh way, but it is kind of like, yeah, it took me a while to actually notice they'd done anything to it because the original image of it is got banded gray on it. It's just naturally blended banded gray. Like I think it's supposed to be shadows or something. And then you look at the new version and it's very distinct banded gray. And I'm like, I had to look at it a couple of times to even notice they'd done any. I do think we've talked about this enough, though, so I'm going to move on to something that Liz caught because I had missed it. They've announced when Phase 2 for the Season of Mastery in WoW Classic is going live, and it's on the 16th, which is 2 days from now. So since today is Tuesday, it'll be this Thursday. They will launch Phase 2, which is, what did you call it, small or unimpressive? Which one was it?
Small. It's a pretty small content update.
Yeah.
I mean, comparatively.
It's Dire Maul and the, Kazakh and Azuragos world bosses, which, I mean, it's only a month. It's literally a month to the day. It's December 16th. The Season Mastery launched on November 16th. So after a month, they're putting in Phase 2, which is, as Liz pointed out, a really small patch. We did a bit of back and forth on possible when the next ones are going to be. I think Phase 3 is going to be in January. And the reason I think Phase 3 is going to be in January is because Molten Core has been cleared already. Ani has been cleared. All the raid content has been cleared already, which wasn't... The hope was that the Season of Mastery would increase the challenge, and it did increase the challenge. It did make it harder, but not hard enough for it not to be cleared like almost within seconds of it being open. So...
It took a day or two. There was a little time.
Yeah, it took a day or two. It basically took people the amount of time it took them to get to 60 and just power through stuff. And that's, you know, those are people who are trying to do that. So the average player is not in that situation. But I do think that by mid-January, we're going to be in a situation where all that stuff has been cleared for a couple of months and people are going to start being like, when's the next thing? So that's why I think the Phase 3 will be January 16th. But then I think after that, they're going to start going 3 or even 4 months between phases, because I really think they're not going to drop Phase 6, which is the last phase. It's Naxxramas until November, because they said they wanted it to be a year. So if they're still doing that, go ahead, Liz.
The other thing to keep in mind is that all phases other than this one have a raid in them. This is the only phase that does not have a big content piece like that.
Mm-hmm. And partially the phases got changed because they put all the PvP content in Phase 1. It originally would have been Phases 3 and 4, right?
I think so. It was a little later.
Yeah, so there was some jiggering. I think we're going to see Phase 3 in January. That's my thing. Do either of you have a different opinion or any opinion you want to share on it?
Nope, I'm good.
I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
I mean, Blizzard is going to do what they want to do, but I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, it really does depend on how long this one lasts, too. So trying to make sure I'm not missing any of the other stuff you pointed out. You've got the classic stuff. We already talked about Mage Tower. Oh, Wintervale. Wintervale is also this week. It's also on the 16th, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're also doing Overwatch's Winter Wonderland is the 16th. That's where
we're
talking
about.
Also
on the 16th.
Yeah, a lot of stuff's coming out on the 16th. Do they usually do stuff on Thursdays? Have I missed this?
I mean,
yeah. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Thursdays do feel weird to me, but event releases that aren't tied to patches they don't need to be on Tuesdays. So
yeah, I'm surprised by all the stuff happening on the 16th. But yeah, so we're getting Wintervale in WoW on the 16th. We're getting it. I haven't heard anything about Hearthstone or Heroes of the Storm getting Wintervale of any kind. but Liz might know better on Hearthstone.
Hearthstone does usually get something, but it may be small and they haven't announced it.
Okay.
Heroes of the Storm has kind of slowed down on the number of events they do every year, so I have no idea.
Yeah, and they might just bring back something if they do, yeah. Hmm. But we've got Overwatch's Winter Wonderland. I'm assuming there's new skins. I don't know what they are yet because I literally just heard about this.
There's a D.Va Santa skin where her mech is all themed. But that's the only one we've seen. They haven't started doing previews of them. Usually they just tweet these little tiny videos of everyone, and they've only shared the D.Va skin so far.
Okay. All right. So that's pretty much it, except for one thing that I wanted to talk about because it's important to me and to practically nobody else, but who cares? Basically, I don't know if you guys pay attention to Assassin's Creed, whether it's, you know, the franchise as a whole or any specific game, but they recently started working on their Assassin's Creed Infinity project, which is going to be the next big Assassin's Creed. And it's not coming out for like 2-3 years. It's like 2023 at the earliest. Like, that's from Ubisoft. They're like, this is not going to be next year. It's not going to be for a while. One of the things they did was they took Ubisoft Montreal, which is the studio that does most of the Assassin's Creed, the studio that did Valhalla and did Origins before him, and partnered them with Ubisoft Quebec, which is the studio that did Immortals Fenyx Rising and Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I think Black Flag. Can't remember if it was Black Flag or Syndicate. It was Syndicate they did. That studio is now, they're working together to do the next Assassin's Creed, and Odyssey, and was one of my favorites. I love that game. I've talked about it to the point where people are quite sick of hearing about it. But one of the things they're doing, and I do think this is the result of Quebec being involved, is they're releasing something called Assassin's Creed Crossover Stories, and it's two DLC, both of them free, both of them relatively sizable. One of them is for Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and it introduces Cassandra, the protagonist from Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And she comes, basically, if you played the Odyssey DLC Legacy of the First Blade, imagine if instead of some guy you'd never heard of who turned out to be a famous pre-assassin assassin, if Cassandra was the character who showed up. That's what they're doing here. But in Odyssey, they are releasing a DLC 3 years after the game came out. And at this point, a year and a half after the game stopped any active development, they are releasing a DLC for it. So they've gotten active development again. And the DLC here is almost as big as the one for Valhalla. It's a new island to explore. It's a new storyline that basically sets the bridge for what happened to Cassandra after the main story of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It's essentially an end to Cassandra's story in Odyssey and setting up the status quo that will lead her to be in Valhalla, which is roughly close to 1,200 years later. And it's the first time that Ubisoft has ever done anything like this. They did a crossover between Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed this year as well. Watch Dogs Legion and Assassin's Creed had a crossover. But this is the first time they've crossed over inside the Assassin's Creed franchise, much less creating significant content for the older game that they've replaced so people can play that and then go play the new game. And that's the thing that gets me is this what they're going to be doing with Infinity? Is Infinity going to be constant crossovers? Is that where the goal is? Because we don't know anything about Infinity, except the dreaded words live service game have been mentioned. I know Joe has feelings about live service games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, Liz, I don't actually know your opinion of live service games.
I'm not even sure what the term live service game would mean, except I'm already wary of it.
Yeah, it's basically when the game is out for a while and they have a whole bunch of like little microtransactions and stuff like that instead of just doing DLC and so forth.
Pay us $100 and keep paying us every month for new content.
Yeah.
And that's the only way that you get a complete game.
Mm-hmm.
That's games as service.
I mean, isn't that kind of what World of Warcraft is?
No.
Yeah, kind of, but no.
It is, but not in the same way. So like you can play World of Warcraft and have a complete expansion, and yes, you're getting a whole thing, but it's MMOs are different in that regard. This is like taking a single player game and releasing an incomplete game, and then you pay to complete the game as you go. So like an MMO multiplayer experience is completely different in those regards. It's what gave the idea to single player games to start doing games as services, and including things like microtransactions and things like that. But it They're similar but different. It's hard to explain. But yeah, I'm not a fan of it because it usually means that somebody's going to try to nickel and dime us.
Basically, yeah. One of the things, even some people have even talked about how sometimes the games are released and in order to really complete them, it's almost like a gacha game at this point. You have to spend money to get like a booster for your XP or what have you, because otherwise it just takes too long to do. There's a lot of back and forth on it. In the case of this one, though, I do find this fascinating. I do. Whatever Infinity is going to be about, we have no idea. But the fact that they're doing something like this, and all this DLC is completely free. Like, you need to pay for the next big Assassin's Creed Valhalla DLC, which is called, I think it's from the Fate of Ragnarok or something. I can't remember. Dawn of Ragnarok. But that's a paid expansion. This DLC, which is pretty close to an expansion, it's pretty big. I've already started playing the Valhalla one. It's free. It's just, they just gave it to you. And it's like, that's a lot of content to just hand to people to set up this crossover. And they announced it yesterday and it went live today. How often does somebody announce something the day before it comes out? That is not common in the gaming industry. Usually they would have announced this weeks ago to get people hyped. Instead, they just like, oh yeah, and tomorrow we're doing this. That Valhalla is very bizarre as a game in terms of its life cycle, and it is something I don't know. When I watch this happen, I have no idea where they're going with this. It is an interesting thing to see Valhalla constantly trying to come up with new stuff for people to do and the ways they're doing it, and I'm straight up blindsided by this. I had no idea this was going to happen, so I wanted to mention it. I think it's important, and of course, you know, Cassandra's back, and I will take any excuse to say that Melisandre Mahood is one of the greatest voice actors of our time. And the scene where Eivor and Cassandra meet is just beautiful. It's beautiful. It's amazingly. But that's probably enough for stories, I think. Unless you guys have anything else you think we should be talking about.
I'm good.
Liz?
No, I think we got it.
All right, then we will move on to questions. As is usually the case for the podcast, if you have a question for the show, you can email us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch so we know it's for the show. Or you can go to our Discord server to the patron Q and podcast questions channel, and you can leave questions for, you know, us or for any of the other podcasts. Just, you know, let us know which podcast it's for. And please do actually ask the occasional question for Blizzard Watch, because quite frankly, we don't get a lot of them, and it does make putting this email together pretty hard. I think sometimes people think if it's not for Lore Watch, it should be for the Q. And I mean, I will steal Q questions. I'm not above it. I'll steal questions from anything. But it would be nice if occasionally y'all just asked us a question so I could not feel like I'm ruining anybody else's day. But yeah, we've got a fair amount of them here. Okay. We've done dice rolls in the past.
We do that, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You are completely right.
Yep. Yeah.
Liz, you had wanted to do something about the patron pledge drive we did last week.
Yes, we did spend a couple weeks doing a pledge drive to get some new supporters, and we got a bunch of y'all. I am so, so grateful to everyone who pledged their support for the site. We are up to 824 patrons and $4,446 a month, which is still a bit below the goal that we would like to hit for standard site operations. But it is great, and we really appreciate your support, especially with the holidays coming up. I know it can be hard. We just appreciate that. It helps keep the site going. It helps keep these podcasts going, and it lets us do what we do. So thank you. We appreciate you for being here, reading, listening, whether you can support us or not. But your support really helps. It is what allows this site, this podcast, to exist. And I have a list of names for everyone who jumped on board this past month. Who does anyone other than me want to read them? Joe, did you want to do your announcer voice?
Sure, I'm more than happy to do that. So we got a list of, we're going to start with our first new supporters. We got Hulk, Mike O, KG, Incalescent Productions, Bruno C, Andrew M, Zed, Winterwolf, John, Daryl H, Raleigh W, Andrew C, Kit B, Coral, Mark L, Diana, Captain Cakewalk, Verdigris, welcome back, friend, Ken C, Benjamin L, Aramis, Rick B, Mark S, Culliver, Nancy, GP, Suggle Kitten, welcome back, Christina C, Arvid O, MLB, James D, Senpai and Bam Bam, Ness, Megan, Kathy C, Brent J, Joey H, Alan, and Manny T. Now, we did also get a...
Hold on. Before you continue, I want everyone to point out how nice it is that the Hulk is supporting us.
It is very nice that the Hulk is supporting us.
I mean, you know, you don't get the Hulk for every possible Patreon week, but here we go. We got the Hulk. I think that's important. Okay, continue.
I was going to say, we did also get a list of people who increased their pledges, and I can go ahead and read those unless somebody else wants to.
No, you go.
Okay. For those that increased their pledges, thank you. We understand that, you know, again, holidays and everything and it being tight, but thank you very, very much. And our increased pledge supporters are Scott S., Joe G., Matt F., Sumaksu, Andrew F., Gary L., Raven and EJ, which are from the Girls Gone Wild podcast. Thank you very much for helping support us there. Jeff B., Adam H., Jeffrey, Lottie H., Barbara L., Cameron H., Anthony S., Calchus, Josh M., Nathan, Marcus L., Stormy Steph, Shianability, Stephen B., Catherine K., Chris P., and Nevertheless. So thank you very much, everybody. We do appreciate it. Your support does actually mean that we can keep doing this. And that makes me happy. And I hope it makes you a little bit happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are so, so grateful for your support. And I promise you, we are going to stop bothering you about this at least for a while.
Every single podcast, I still call it out. It's going to keep happening, folks. Got to keep the lights on.
Bothering you a little less.
Well, I mean... I just want you guys to, you know, be happy that I decided to not read any of the names, because the only two voices I got going are incredibly squeaky voice and mysterious accent that ranges between Scottish, Russian, and gibberish.
And coal miner. Don't forget coal miner.
No, I don't feel like the coal miner one is significantly different from gibberish, quite frankly. But yeah, so you should be thankful that Joe read them, because either Joe or Liz would have done a much better job than I could ever hope of doing. But yeah, now we're going to move on to the questions, because, you know, that's the other thing we do for you guys as patrons. We look at your questions first. So there you go. Joe just read a lot. So Liz, do you want to read the first one?
Sure. This one is from Tetsum. Question for the BW podcast. Walk down memory lane. What moment, system, story beat in-game made the game feel most alive for you? Mine would be the Mists of Pandaria 5.1 patch story. Even though time-gated, rep-gated, all the hated gate words, it was one moment that I felt I was in a living world. Seeing the progress happened as you advanced the story made it feel like you were impacting the game world. I don't know why, but Garrison advancement, even though it too had a noticeable change on the world, didn't have the same impact, perhaps because it was disconnected from the main story. So, you two, what do you think, what kind of moment or story beat kind of made the game feel alive, makes the game feel alive?
Mine's a quiet thing. I remember the first time I was going from Menethil Harbor in the wetlands up to Arathi. There's a bridge that the Dark Iron Dwarves were trying to blow up. This is back in vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
And
Thandalspan.
I fell off the bridge and had to run down and get my body because I was like I was like my first level 30 character. I was terrible. I fell off the bridge, had to run back and get my body. While I was down there, I explored the area a bit and I found a letter. The letter was to a guy named Sully Ballou. And I brought it back to, I think it was Stormwind, actually. It was from either Stormwind or Ironforge. I can't remember which. Maybe it was Ironforge, but it was this letter of back from like a soldier writing back home. And it turned out to be inspired by a real life letter written by like Sullivan Ballou, I think his name actually was. He was a Civil War, American Civil War soldier who was writing back home. And this letter was basically patterned off of it. It was a reference to it. And I didn't know any of that at the time. I just knew that there was this letter from this actual person who died. And I had to get it back to his family. And it had nothing to do with like the stuff I was dealing with. It didn't have anything to do with my quests. There was no reward for it. It was just this quiet thing of, you know, I can't just like, what am I supposed to do? Just throw this out and keep going. This is this guy's last letter. His family deserves to know. So yeah, I just, that moment has, it stuck with me. I think my number two is the monument in the Barrens to one of the Coulter brothers, the one that passed away. That one, I remember finding that just accidentally the first time I was playing Horde and being like, whoa, what is this? And I had no idea what it was. It just was there. And it just felt like, wow, this world is huge and there's stuff in it I don't understand. So those would be what I'd say.
For me, it's all about the little things, and they're not big cinematics. They're not huge revelations or things like that. It's very similar to what Matt pointed out. And the game has a plethora of books and journals and notes and letters that you find, whether it's looting random things, whether it's clicking on things inside of buildings or a drop from a mob. And some of these things are incredibly impactful, and every single expansion has had them. Whether it's the steamy diary sitting inside of the camp inside of High Mountain, or anything else, there are these moments that make it feel like this world is lived in. A letter that you find on an undead corpse in the Plaguelands that was meant to be delivered to somebody's family. All of those things combined allow it to feel alive, more alive, I think, than just cinematics alone or just expansion events alone. Like Cataclysm arguably made the game feel the most alive because it changed the most as far as everything in the world. But to me, it's always been those little things. Anne and I used to have conversations back and forth about all the letters and books and stuff that we would keep and we would find. And we would shove them in our banks. I have no bank space, and it's all filled with stuff like this. It's not filled with gear. It's not filled with, stuff that I fell in love with, gear-wise or spent. It's all stuff that either, A, has an emotional impact or memory on me, like whether it's the Rakhladar or the staff or any of that stuff. But on my shaman, I don't have anything in there aside from my Dark Shaman Transmog set, which I will never, ever get rid of. It took me too long to get it. But it's all little story things. It's all little tiny pieces of garbage that are meant to be vendor trash at some point, but either have something where you right click on them and you can read through them, or they have an inscription or they have an item description that informs like little tiny things like here's a ring. Oh, it has the initials of somebody, blah, blah, blah. This, you know, stuff like that. I think those are the most important things that make the game actually feel alive. And I think it's the thing that most people ignore the most. What about you, Liz?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. The first thing that really comes to mind, and it's not the only thing, is actually Battle for Azeroth. I thought Battle for Azeroth used a lot of cinematics very beautifully to tell stories that were just very live in the world. And when I think of the storytelling of Battle for Azeroth, what always stands out to me is the battle for Dazar'a Lor Raid. Dazar'a Lor is the Horde capital in Battle for Azeroth, and it is such a beautiful city. It's got all of this depth, all of this detail, and it was a really annoying city to play in because you actually had to have a flight path from one side, one end to the other, and it was just impossible to navigate. But it felt like a living, breathing city. And in the Battle for Dazar'a Lor Raid, you were fighting your way through this city. And there's even a distinct narrative for Alliance players and Horde players. There are different encounters. You can see the Alliance went through first and the Horde is following behind in their footsteps. And you see half of the, a third of the raid from the Horde's perspective and a third of the raid from the Alliance's perspective. And you kind of get to that middle point and there's this cinematic where Rastakhan dies and his daughter Talanji comes and finds him. And it's just it's this heart-wrenching cinematic where she says goodbye. And also Wamsandi shows up and there's like a deal and it's, you know, a lot's going on there. And it's just it's such an emotional moment. I think that's one of the best cinematics the game has ever made. And I always think of that one as kind of a real story highlight. But the fact that this raid took you through the city that you're in every day, and it told this really, you know, big story moment throughout, it made it feel like you were playing in the world. When so often you go to a raid instance and it's somewhere far away, it's somewhere strange, you have to take like 27 flight paths to get there. But this was a raid that was like at home. And it felt really different and really interesting to be playing through this space. It felt like it was alive, you know? But talking about the little things like you were, Joe, when you started bringing that up, I immediately thought about Ezra and that quest they mm-hmm. added in, the Torin starting zone. Why am I blanking? Mulgore. Yes, there's Ezra Chatterton, who was a child who wanted, who did this make a wish thing, and Blizzard added a quest for him.
Ezra Chatterton, some may know him as E Phoenix, is what Liz is talking about mm-hmm. too. Didn't they also fly him out and like have him do game development for like a day too?
Yeah, like, I think that's his voice. The office.
And his crossbow too. The season two crossbow, he designed that. Sorry, go ahead, please.
They added a little quest for him in Mulgore where he's lost his dog and you have to go find his dog. And he is actually the one voicing the character. And it's such a tiny thing. But it's like, if you know why it's there, it's such a moment that makes WoW feel not just as a world in itself, but anchored in our world, which I think is something you don't feel a lot when you're playing the game.
Interesting thing too, they also changed I want to say the elder's name during the Lunar Festival in Thunderbluff.
It's now
Ezra Weedhoof, yeah, in honor of him. Those are some very big moments. The game is full of little tiny things like that. There's tons of tributes and wonderful little storytelling bits throughout it. We could spend an entire episode talking about them if we wanted to.
There is one more that I have to make.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The night I got my shoulders.
To tear you up, yeah, it should. You should be crying. No, seriously, the night that got my shoulders, it actually did, because my guild, I didn't know my shoulders were on the auction house. I should say, when I say my shoulders, I mean there's a pair of shoulders in World of Warcraft named Rossi's Rosin Soaked Shoulders, and I have them, but I didn't get them through killing the boss that dropped them, because he wouldn't drop them. Like I would go on every character I had that was high enough level to heal him, and I would grind up coins to roll again because I knew they wasn't going to drop when I killed him. And I killed him over and over and over again and rolled coins over and over and over again, and the shoulders never dropped. They just wouldn't drop. It became a running gag to the point where there was a tally in the WoWhead comments of people going, "Has Rossi gotten his shoulders yet?" No, he hasn't gotten his shoulders yet. Every time I would make a reference to it on our site, then would update the WoWhead comments with it. So I was just hanging out in Boralis. I don't even remember what I was doing. And one of my guildmates was like, "Have you been to the auction house, the black market auction house?" I was like, "No. Why would I go there?" And they're like, "Your shoulders are up." And I was like, "Well, I don't have that much gold anyway, so it's not that big a deal." And she was like, "No, you are getting your shoulders." And before I knew what was happening, my guild was just they were like all showing up and thrusting money at me, like just, you know, here. And when I bid all that money, and then so at the last minute, somebody came along and started outbidding me. And I went through all the money they had. They busted out like something like over 1 million gold from their various characters, and most of it coming from my friend Kim. And they made sure I got the shoulders. They put it on me and say, "If you need more, just tell me, and I'll open a trade with you immediately and just throw more at you." And so I got my shoulders. And it was because my guild came together. And I've heard people say this before. I'm positive Liz said it today in a comment on our work thing. It is the people you play the game with that really ultimately makes the game what it is. And those people they're real people. And that's why the game can feel so real to you. And why it can feel alive, because actual honest to God people are like, you know, "You're going to get your shoulders today," and they'll make you get your shoulders. Or they're like, you know, "You're going to get your achievements. You're going to get your mount, because we're going to pull you through. Even if you can't do that achievement, we're going to make sure you do it." And those moments definitely make the game feel alive to me. But also, I'm wearing that shoulder transmog right now. Like that's the shoulder named after me. I've got it on the character that I'm streaming on. So if you're watching the stream, that's the shoulder that I have because my guildmates got it for me. So yeah, that's one I wanted to mention.
Okay.
But I think we've covered this. And that was Liz, right? Was that Liz's, or did Joe read that line?
No, that was Liz. I can.
Okay, then you're up, dude.
The next one is from Steve of the Steverinos. Got another general game question for you. What are your top three favorite stories in games? Like the games that told the best stories, not the stories about those games. I'll start with Liz. What games have you played that you felt had the best stories?
Like the game as a whole, or are we talking about a story moment in a game?
I think we can go with either.
You know, I mean, I like the games that make you actually, like, feel something. Like, if it can provoke an emotional response, whether you laugh or you cry or you're just like, I'm gonna throw the controller at the screen because this is super upsetting. Like, those are the moments you want to. You want something that's not, like, it actually touches you in some way enough to provoke that emotional response. I, of course, am a big lover of the Mass Effect games. I harp on these, but, and it's not, you know, necessarily the overarching story, which people have criticized and can be a real downer when you have played, you know, like 150 hours of a trilogy, and then your only thing to do in the end is, like, destroy everything in a variety of different ways. But it's always the little stories. Like, there are lots of little character reactions that are so either touching or they break your heart, and there's Mass Effect Citadel DLC in Mass Effect 3, which is just a hilarious story where you're chasing down your own clone, and it's like, it's ridiculous in all the best ways. That was the obvious answer. Let me give you another one. Firewatch. Have either of you two played Firewatch?
Yep, one of my favorites. And shout out to Sissy Jones, who voiced Delilah in that, who also I got to run Shadowrun for. Amazing voice actress.
I haven't played it, sorry.
I mean, it's a short, narratively driven story, and mm-hmm. it's such a sweet little story. I mean, it just throws you in the deep end. You're playing this guy who has had this crushing emotional thing happen, and he is dealing with it by literally running away to the woods and becoming like park ranger, and, you know, watching out for forest fires and living miles away from anyone. And it tells a lot of story, and it has a lot of emotion and suspense without actually doing anything. It's so beautifully put together. And I believe it is coming out to Xbox Game Pass for anyone who has Game Pass on your Xbox or your PC. It is well worth a couple of hours of time.
Well worth playing. It is very well done. All right.
I'm going to let someone else talk about something that's not Mass Effect.
I was going to say, Matt, do you want to go?
Okay. I mean, one of them, and I remember this one to this day, the first time I played Planescape Torment, it is an interesting game. It is in some ways a very much a product of its time, and I don't think I would like it as much if I played it today. But at the time, that whole concept, the message of the game basically being based around that question of what can change the nature of a man, and the exploration of that idea was, I didn't know video games could do that. I didn't know a video game could be about trying to understand who you are. It's sort of like Memento in a way, similar idea that, you know, this character doesn't remember their life and has clues written on their body. And it came out years before Memento. So, you know, it wasn't ripping it off. It just happened to have a similar idea. It is really hard to describe without ruining the central message of it. Yes, the game is from 1999, so yeah, spoiler things are out, but I would have rather you get to play it. It's like I wouldn't say the key mystery of the Sixth Sense, even though the movie's been out for years. I'd still would rather you get to play it or watch it. So I'm going to just say that Planescape Torment had a big effect on me. It's one of those games that stuck with me. I played a lot of story-driven, narrative-driven games. One of the moments that affected me the most, and it's kind of along the lines of what Liz was talking about, there's a moment in Dragon Age 2 that I think if you've had this experience in your life, it hits really hard. Obviously, I have not had a evil maniac kidnap my mother and try to build somebody out of her, but my mother did die when I was young. Like, I was a young adult, my mother died, I woke up and she was dead. And the moment in the game where you realize that your mother is dead, like, she's going to die, you can't save her, you just get to say goodbye and then she's gone. It hit me so hard that I had to stop playing the game and go wake up my wife, who was trying to sleep. It was 3 o'clock in the morning and she had to go to work in the morning. I had to go wake her up, and it just collapsed. Like, I was just leaking emotion, weeping, like, just really messed up. I was not expecting the game to kill my mom. You know, the mother character is there for the first 2/3 of Dragon Age 2, and then she dies, and it's really gut-wrenching. And I remember like just being like, oh, I can't say it's my favorite in that I enjoyed it, but I still think about it. I still remember it. I couldn't tell you what was going on in Skyrim past, like, you know, oh yeah, they wanted to cut my head off and then Dragon showed up. But I will never forget that moment in Dragon Age 2. It has stayed with me. And I'm trying to think. The goal here is like sometimes you're sitting here thinking to yourself, I want to come up with something cool and interesting and not just the same stuff I always say. But there's a reason I like the stuff I always say. You know, there's a reason I repeat the same games and talk about the same games over and over again. There is actually a moment in Mass Effect I would bring up, except, you know, as Liz said, I should probably talk about different games in Mass Effect. But
I want to know.
All right. This one, I don't know if it would be a moment that most people really remember too well, but the first expansion for the original Mass Effect, it's called Bring Down the Sky. And Batarians have seized control of a mining asteroid and are using the rockets that are on the asteroid that would normally guide it to a mining facility to aim it at a planet that has been settled by human colonists. And they're just going to kill everybody. They're going to smash the asteroid into the planet and kill everybody. There's not enough time to evacuate the whole thing. And so Shepard goes in to save the day. And you can choose through your actions to kill the terrorist responsible. But if you do that, you're probably going to get there's a human hostage that's going to get killed if you do. Or you can let him go, but save the hostage. By itself, this would just be a minor thing. It would just be, okay, this happened. But the fact that in Mass Effect 3, if you chose to let him go, that guy comes back and he's been committing terrorist acts on the Citadel, and he's threatening to kill you. And you're like, you can choose to kill him or you can choose to work with him. You're like, look, your people have been destroyed. You know, and he even brings up something you did in Mass Effect 2. If you played through the DLC, and even if you didn't, you still did it in the canon of the game. He even brings up the thing that you did in Mass Effect 2, that you destroyed a Batarian relay and wiped out like hundreds of thousands of Batarians died because you blew up a relay and that destroyed their colony. And it's this moment where the choice is totally in your hands. Do you work with this guy? Do you like convince him, look, what happened to you? It's horrible, but we don't have to like each other, but we have a bigger problem. We need to work together, or you can kill him. And it is in a lot of ways, I find it like to be the fulfillment of what you always want from a game like that. It brings together all three games like in this one moment, and your actions have led you here. And the fact that this quest even exists is due down to a choice you made in the first game, in the DLC for the first game. And I've never forgotten it. It's just really, really tightly put together, in my opinion.
That's some very good choices there. We're running out of time, so I'm just going to give mine real quick, and then we can kind of close out from there if you guys want. But for those of you that don't know, I did a podcast before any of ours here and also during that was entirely about story-driven video games. So I could probably go on for a few hours about some of my favorites, but I'm not going to because I've already done that. The ones that stick out to me as memorable for what they created, Wolf Among Us was probably one of my favorite Telltale games. It was an interesting way of bringing those comic books into a playable format. It had a very interesting story, compelling characters, absolutely loved it. Along the same lines, while it wasn't a Telltale game, it did something very similar, was Life is Strange, which again was all about story-driven gaming. It was about character development and making choices and impactful choices. And what you did and what you made choice-wise in those games changed what happened. It changed the outcome. It changed the ending. It changed what you experienced as a player and a character. And so it had great replayability and just fantastic moments. Life is Strange is one of the few times where I remember crying at a video game. And then along the same lines, one that was meant as a walking simulator, and I'm just going to throw this in here real quick, is What Remains of Edith Finch. It's on Game Pass right now, and if you haven't played it, it's worthwhile. It tells a story, multiple stories, about a family that is seemingly cursed, but it is presented in such a memorable way, and it makes you think about, like, are they actually cursed? Is this some form of shared delusion in a house that looks something akin to the Winchester Mansion? Absolutely fantastic. And the last one that I'm going to call out, and it is not the best game. It is probably one that is relatively terrible for a lot of reasons, and it's filled with a ton of tropes, but I absolutely adore it because of what it generated, and that's Alan Wake. The descent into madness, the Twin Peak vibes of it, the fact that it spawned not just one other game, but an entire universe. If you've played Control, you can thank Alan Wake for existing for that. The universe that's there is the Wake universe. And there's even another game coming out soon where the story continues yet again. It is one that I think a lot of people forgot about, but still on my radar. And those are just some of my favorites. I could talk for hours on end about story-driven games, but there are just so many out there if you take the time to look. And I will say things like the Game Pass, and Liz has brought this up before, are great for experiencing some of those things that maybe you missed before. I plan on going through Plague's Tale. Because I never got to play through it, and it's on Game Pass, so I'm going to download it and play it because I hear the story and it is great. It's a great opportunity to go through and actually experience some of the stuff that I might have missed. But those are mine, quick and dirty on that list. Does anybody else have anything they want to add?
Monkey Island was good.
Monkey Island was also good. Liz?
No, we've hit a lot of good ones. And yes, I do remember exactly the moment in Mass Effect you were talking about, Matt.
Yeah, it's just like you're like, I mean, I want to kill him so bad. But I guess that's it for us then. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. If you've got a question, I do this every week lately. Joe.
It's okay, Matt. I don't like the sound of my voice either. The outro here is going to be our standard one, folks. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, the better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience. And again, a gigantic thank you to all of the people that showed up during our pledge drive to become new Patreon supporters or to up their current contributions to help us keep going. We do appreciate
it. Thank you, guys. It does really help. But as I was saying before I interrupted myself because I had forgotten to let Joe talk, this is the Blizzard Watch podcast. If you've got a question for the show, you can send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch so we know it's for the show. Or you can go to the Patreon Q&A podcast questions channel. And if you're one of our new patrons, you can go there too now. And you can ask a question in there. And we tend to look there first because that's where we find questions. And then, that's it. Oh, no, we also have the Q questions channel. My bad. You can go down there and we can ask questions there if you're not a patron, because we want to get questions from non-patrons too. It's not just for patrons. We just like to give them a leg up because they help us keep the site going. But yeah, this has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here with us. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for listening, because it's, you know, why we're here. And we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.